Live from the ESPN Pensacola studios. It's the Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. You could be a part of today's show by texting or calling at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Welcome in into the Glass Half Full on this Monday morning. Hope you had a great weekend full of some awesome football. And, of course, all the big announcements yesterday, finding out where your team may or may not be playing in the college football playoffs or in a bowl game. And, of course, that leads us right into where we're starting today's show with a very special guest, the executive director of bowl season, Nick Carparelli, joining us now here on the Glass Half Full. Nick, good morning. Thank you for taking time out to join us.
Thanks for having me, Jordan.
Now, of course, just want to go ahead and first off talk about a little bit of kind of about your past. Obviously, you worked with Under Armour and helped kind of get their collegiate brand off the ground and running. So you look at the bowl season. One of the things I wanted to talk about first with you is these awesome mascots we're seeing. I can remember back, you know, when I was younger watching the Outback Bowl, and you'd see they'd pull fans out of the stands and they'd put them in the Bloomin' Onion costume or the coconut shrimp costume. But now it's really kind of evolved where these bowl games, they do a really good job of really kind of touching base with the fans and having these mascots. Now we have Duke's Mayo Bowl, we have Pop-Tart Bowl. Just talk about the branding and just how much it means with these bowl games that we're seeing this year.
Yeah, I think bowl games are starting to develop a reputation of really delivering great value to their title sponsors. You know, there's a lot of sports brands that might be a little bit more conservative, but bowl games have proven that they're willing to be a little bit more creative, take a chance, and have some fun. Obviously, every team who plays in the bowl game wants to win the game, but let's have a little fun with it, and those title sponsor mascots certainly are a lot of fun.
And, of course, we're getting some new Pop-Tarts this year added to the Pop-Tart Bowl, and that's going to be a pretty good game with Miami in that one. But I also want to kind of just talk a little bit about here. You kind of mentioned on the having fun. The bowl games, they do such a great job. And really for anybody that maybe has never gone to a college football bowl game and kind of maybe we can help sway them towards saying, you know what, this year we're going to go find the closest bowl game to us and we're going to go check it out. But it's really all of the stuff, the fan fest and everything leading up to it. It's not just a game. It's a full experience.
It really is. You know, bowl games are wildly popular. There was over 1.5 million people that attended bowl games in person last year. The average bowl game outside of the CFP averaged 3 million television viewers. So people love watching bowl games. I think you're right. I think they're a lot of fun. I think what you're also seeing and what people, what intrigues people is the fact that these bowl games are oftentimes matchups between two teams that you wouldn't normally see schedule each other in the regular season. And they also play in locations and destinations that they wouldn't normally play. So you turn on these bowl games or like yesterday, you see the matchups unfold, which Selection Sunday is always one of my favorite days of the year. And you start to get excited looking at these matchups across the country that you never thought you would see. And can't wait to see in a couple weeks.
Absolutely. And, of course, the closest bowl game to us here at ESPN Pensacola, we do have a bowl game right over in Mobile, and that is definitely going to be a great game, the 68 Ventures Bowl, Arkansas State Bowling Green there at Hancock-Whitney Stadium. So, again, if you're listening right now to Nick and I and you've never been to a college bowl game, that is a great opportunity for you right there. Nick, I want to kind of change gears now and kind of get away from talking about the branding of the bowl games and things like that. I want to talk about, obviously, the bowl season gets started December 14th. We have over 40 games as far as bowl games go, 43, I believe, the exact number. This is the first year for that 12-team playoff. Nick, was there ever a conversation in-house of maybe we should take games like a Gator Bowl or like a, you know, one of those other bowls? It's played around New Year's Day or on New Year's Eve. Was that kind of an idea maybe somebody had to where that was an opening round of the college football playoff bowl game? Or was it kind of always, you know what, let's just keep it on the campus of the higher-seeded team?
Yeah, there were definitely conversations along those lines. This will probably come as no surprise that I'm a big advocate for having all of the playoff games in bowl games. I think just the atmosphere of bowl games where you have a stadium that's half full of one fans, half full of the other, really creates such a unique environment that you don't see in sports anywhere, really. I think the campus games, I think they'll be fun. I think the visiting team is in for a rude awakening. I think they're going to, because these on-campus playoff games, they're going to be true road games for the visitors. Like, it's the home team season ticket. It's the home team fan base. You know, I think the visiting team might get their standard 3,000 tickets for the visiting team. And especially when you get to those 9 seeds, 10 seeds that maybe felt they should have been ranked a little higher in hosting a game, all of a sudden they're going on the road and have an unfair disadvantage. And they're probably going to be saying to themselves, well, hold on a second, what did we sign up for here?
No, I agree with you completely, Nick, especially when you look at situations where you have a team like SMU coming from Dallas, Texas, having to go play in Penn State in December. That's not going to be fun, not only because of the crowd, but the weather as well, for sure.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, teams playing in weather that they're not used to, or just teams who felt they should have been seeded higher. I mean, you hear the head coach in Indiana, who's 11-1, better record than a lot of teams that are in the playoff, and they have to go on the road to play their game. I certainly feel that they probably felt that they should have a home game. But not only do they not have a home game, they have to go on the road, and it's not even a neutral site environment. So a little bit unfair for the visiting team, I think.
It's the glass half full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. We are speaking with Nick Carparelli, the director of bowl season. And, Nick, some other things just kind of want to run by you here. When you guys are looking at – when the bowl season's being planned out, with the whole landscape of – especially with everything that happened with Miami and Alabama, how does that affect the process of – does that maybe if you had maybe like one set matchup in mind, but then you hear Alabama and Miami's left out, does that kind of change the way things are looked at with the bowl planning process? Or is it still kind of you stick with status quo of this was the game that we had planned, we're going to still go with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. A lot of people might think that after the regular season's over and there's just a handful of conference championship games that we should be able to get along with the bowl game matchups. But there's a lot of contingencies in there. So two perfect examples is the ACC and the SEC, right? If Alabama made the playoff, the SEC would have had 4 teams in the playoff instead of 3. Then everybody else in the SEC bowl lineup would have bumped up or down or wrong in the bowl selections. Similarly with the ACC, if they only had one team in, if it was their champion Clemson and SMU had to go to one of the other ACC bowl games, we would certainly have to accommodate that and then everybody else gets bumped down. But in this case, they got bumped up. So if you're in a conference, not only are you rooting for your conference members, as many as possible, to make the playoff for prestige regions for economic reasons, you're also rooting for yourself because it means you get to bump up a slot in the bowl pecking order.
Now, as far as the picking goes, and this is one last thing before we let you go here, Nick, because I know you're a busy man, especially this time of year, and we do appreciate you joining us here on the Glass Half Full. When scouts are going out to look at the games and look at the bowl games, because I think this is an interesting thing because fans don't necessarily get to hear this side of it. When they go to these schools towards the end of the season, is it almost kind of a done deal that is one of the schools that will be in that bowl game, or is it still kind of up in the air and still kind of that decision being made? Because I did receive reports of, we'll use Florida for an example, being in the state of Florida, I did see reports that there were some Gasparilla Bowl scouts and officials maybe at one of those last couple of home games for Florida, and now they're in the Gasparilla Bowl for Tulane. Is that kind of almost meaning, does that signify that that's kind of like a done deal, or could things still change between those last couple of weeks between – you know, the end of the season and the bowl games getting announced?
Well, it's certainly not a done deal at that point, but as you would imagine, as the season goes on and teams win games and lose games, certain teams get eliminated from contention for certain bowl games. So if you're into the last couple weeks of the season and you're seeing a bowl representative at your team's games, they're very sick in the mix for that game. Doesn't mean it's an automatic, but I think that's the opportunity for the bowl representatives to start building relationships with the administration at the school and say, hey, we think we would be a good fit for each other. If it were to happen, let's talk about some of the logistics now, because as I mentioned earlier yesterday, which was Selection Sunday, is fast and furious. So you need to do a little bit of work in advance.
Well, Nick, I think we're going to let you go on that note, buddy. Like I said, I know you got a lot going on this time of year, getting ready for all the bowl games. They do get started again. December 14th is going to be our very first bowl game. That will be the Celebration Bowl between South Carolina State and Jackson State in Atlanta at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Nick, thanks so much for joining us here for a few minutes. And definitely looking for...
If you wouldn't mind, let me put a little quick plug in.
Yeah.
It's been exciting for the fans. We have, for the first time ever, we launched this morning the official bowl season pick'em game. So if you go to bowlseason.com, right at the top, you can click the pick'em game, free to play. Pick the winners of all the bowl games, which everybody loves to do, and the grand prize is two tickets to the national championship game and an airfare next year. And we also have some other great prizes. We have coffee for a year. We have bowling for a year. We have EA Sports video game codes. Like I said, it costs nothing to play. If you're a college football fan, I don't know why you wouldn't play it. Pick'em.bowlseason.com.
Definitely head over there, pick'em.bowlseason.com, and sign up and get involved with that. I'm probably going to do that here during the commercial break coming up. Nick, appreciate it, buddy. Have a great day. We're looking forward to this bowl season.
Thanks, Jordan. Take care.
All right, appreciate it again, Nick. And, I mean, the guy's resume, Nick Carparelli, this is a guy who had a hand in helping recruit players like Donovan McNabb to Syracuse. He was part of the staff there with Bill Belichick in New England. He's worked with Under Armour. Now he's the executive director for bowl season. Just a great get right there, and thank you for him taking some time out for us here at ESPN Pensacola here on the Glass Half Full. We still got a couple minutes before we hit break. So before we do that, I do kind of want to talk a little bit about some of these SEC bowl game matchups that were announced. And then we'll take our first time out of the show. But before we do that, again, some of the SEC bowl games, the Gasparilla Bowl, Tulane in Florida, that actually should be a very interesting game. That game intrigues me quite a bit. Tulane's quarterback just entered the transfer portal. Doesn't mean he can't still play in this game. I haven't seen word on whether he was still going to play in this game or not, just that he's entered the transfer portal. Emory Jones, actually at Florida, I believe in the Gasparilla Bowl against UCF a couple of seasons back, entered the transfer portal, still played in the bowl game. So we'll see what decisions are made there. But also some other news with Tulane. Their head coach has announced that he is going to be sticking around, that he was in the running for several jobs. We're talking about John Summerall. He was in the running for several Power 4 jobs that were coming open, and he let Tulane know this morning that he plans on coming back. He's going to be Tulane's coach. So there's a little solidarity there. I know when you head into bowl season and your coach is potentially either possibly going to get fired with the outcome of the bowl game if you're like a 6-6 team or something like that, or, you know, it's a situation where they may go take a bigger job somewhere else, that's not a solid ground for you to be on. But it is definitely some good news there for Tulane that Summerall is going to be back as the Green Waves coach next season. And like I said, should be a good matchup. I think on paper, Florida should be the better team, but Tulane can score a lot of points. Like if Tulane can run the football against that Florida front seven, and we know that seniors like Cam Jackson and Elijah Badger will play in the game for the Gators, so that's a big boost for them. They could have opted out as seniors and just gone and got ready for the NFL. They'll play in this game. That's going to be especially Cam Jackson up front in that front seven against the running game for Tulane. That's going to be huge for the Gators in this one. But that should be a great one on December 20th there in Tampa. The Armed Forces Bowl, December 27th. Navy and Oklahoma, that should be another good one as well. But, I mean, which Oklahoma team do we see show up for this game? That's the big question. Which Oklahoma team do we see show up for this game in the Armed Forces Bowl? And again, that's going to come up December 27th. Really, December 27th and December 31st. If you're an SEC fan, that's when your bowl games are happening, right? Outside of the college football playoffs, of course. You've also got on the 27th the Liberty Bowl, Arkansas and Texas Tech. That'll be a fun one for sure. The Birmingham Bowl, that is Georgia Tech and Vandy. Can Vandy keep it going, right? Can Vandy expand on this great regular season they have, get a win in the postseason, and kind of catapult them into 2025. It would definitely be a big win for them over Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's a team that is beat Florida State to start off the season. They beat Miami, and then, of course, they almost beat Georgia. It took them to 8 overtime. So Georgia Tech, a very good program. If Vandy could find a way to get a win in that game there in Birmingham, it would definitely be a big boost for that program and Lee Clark moving forward. Las Vegas Bowl, that is USC and A&M. So the second time USC starting the season off against an SEC opponent, and they're closing it off against an SEC opponent as they will take on the Aggies. That should be a interesting matchup. I think Texas A&M is a better team than what they showed in that game against Texas. I think Texas defense just overwhelmed them. and kind of punched them in the mouth early, and they couldn't get back on track, which happens from time to time in games. But I do think that this USC-A&M bowl game is going to be a pretty solid one as well. It's a glass half full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. We are talking SEC bowl matchups with the big announcement of all the bowl matchups yesterday, as well as the college football playoff teams. And we'll get to the CFP coming up in just a little bit. But I did kind of want to just real quick touch on these bowl games coming out of our interview there with Nick Carparelli from Bowl Season Committee, as he is the executive director there. It looks like we've also gotten Music City Bowl, Missouri and Iowa. That should be a decent game. Two teams that really kind of different. I think Missouri's become more of a spread it out and throw the ball around type team. Iowa, definitely a ground and pound type team. So that should be a fun one as well. ReliaQuest Bowl, this is one of the ones that you should have highlighted and circled. Alabama and Michigan. Michigan coming off of that big win over Ohio State. Alabama coming off of that letdown of thinking that they might slip into the backside of the playoffs. They're at 9-3, but just couldn't get it done. And now they're going to the ReliaQuest Bowl. What are they gonna bring to the table? Is there going to be passion? Is there going to be energy there, right? We would not question that if Nick Saban was the head coach. But now with Kalen DeBoer as the head coach, we do have to question, where's Alabama's mindset going to be heading into this bowl game as a team that throughout most of the season was seen as a playoff team? Then at the end, they lose that game to Oklahoma. You think they're going to be out of it, but they find a way to be ranked inside it. And then obviously we get the final rankings and they're left out. So roller coaster of emotions the last few weeks for Alabama. Where's their mind going to be going into this game against the Michigan team, who seems to be on the rise after that big upset win over Ohio State to close out the year? The Citrus Bowl, South Carolina and Illinois. I think this is a great chance for South Carolina to kind of plant their flag and say, we're a good football team. Lenore Sellers is not going anywhere. He's going to be our starting quarterback. Those rumors of him hitting the transfer portal, that's exactly what they were. Rumors. Not anything worth putting any kind of merit into whatsoever. That we're going to be sticking around a little while. You're going to have to deal with us. We're going to be back next year, and we're going to try to actually take that next step and get into the college football playoff next year. So we'll see a tough game there from South Carolina for sure against Illinois. And our final SEC non-college football playoff bowl game, Texas Bowl on December 31st, LSU and Baylor. And Baylor needs a win in this, right? Baylor is definitely one of those teams that is in need of a win in their bowl game. I think LSU would probably be fine either way. Definitely with the Brian Kelly noise, it's going to get a little louder if they lose this game to Baylor. But for Baylor, you're looking at completely resetting the program if you lose this game, right? Because it's not been a good couple of years there at Baylor. They kind of squeaked into this bowl game. I think LSU is the better team in this one, though. We'll take our first time out of the show. When we come back, more of the glass half full right after this.
The Rich Eisen Show on weekdays after Greeny at 11 to 2 on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
It's the glass half full with Jordan Glass on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Welcome back into the glass half full here on this Monday morning. And yes, bumping in a little Carol of the Bells, getting you ready for Christmas. Just a couple of weeks away. Hopefully you've started your Christmas shopping by now. If not, We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. We'll get you an Amazon app or something like that, and you can just run through and get something for everybody on Amazon. You get one bulk delivery at the same time, and boom, there you go. So we'll fix it up for you. Don't worry. What's going on? If you want to be a part of the show, 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. Want to kind of dive back into this now, because we'll get to recapping conference championship weekend, because I do want to talk about those games. But obviously, there's a lot to talk about with the bowl game announcements yesterday. We're talking to Nick Carparelli, who is the executive director of Bowl Season. We get to talk to him at the top of the show. Thank you again to Nick for joining us. And, of course, we get the college football playoffs. And I think looking at the college football playoff rankings for the most part, looking at the way things are set up here on the brackets in front of me, I think for the most part, the committee got it right. I really do. I don't see there being anything too controversial in here. Yes, there are things like what Nick was talking about where Cignetti from Indiana is, you know, kind of thinking they should be rated a little bit higher. And you know what? At 11-1, the way that they played this season, yes, they should have. Because I think – I can't remember who it was. I was watching College Football Live on ESPN, and they were talking about Indiana. And they made the case that, yes, they lost to Ohio State the way that they did. But also the thing about Indiana is that they beat the teams that are mediocre the way that a good team should beat the teams that are mediocre, right? Like 52-7 over Nebraska. That's how a good playoff team should beat a team like Nebraska. So, yes, they lost to Ohio State, but the resume is still there, right? So I think – you know, Indiana right being right there at 10, I definitely can see where Kurt Cignetti is upset at the fact that his team is been left out. But also at the same time, you know, I think you're sitting there right there at 10. You've got a good opportunity. I think playing Notre Dame is actually a pretty good matchup for him. I think it would be the quarterfinal matchup against Georgia is where the problem would be. So I think that matchup right there, Indiana-Notre Dame, is actually going to turn out to be a pretty good one. I think SMU-Penn State is going to be a fun game. I think Tennessee-Ohio State is going to be a fun game. Clemson-Texas, however, I just don't know if Clemson has the firepower to keep up with Texas. Because I full-heartedly believe that we are going to start seeing Texas, and I've seen a couple of people start to kind of have this conversation. I full-heartedly believe that in the postseason, in the playoffs, as crazy as it sounds, I think we're going to start seeing Texas shift more towards Arch Manning, right? I don't think Quinn Ewers, I think they realize Quinn Ewers may not be the guy that can win them a championship, so I think we're going to see more and more of Arch Manning. And I thought we'd see that, honestly, on Saturday in the SEC championship game. We just didn't. And maybe that's a reason why the end result came out the way it did. But I think right now for Texas, if you go into this game against Clemson and you just play your brand of football at home, I think you'll be just fine against Clemson. I don't see Clemson having enough. Even as the ACC champion, SMU playing a bad half. And again, we'll talk more about that coming up later on in the show. But right now we're talking about the college football playoff rankings and the brackets and how it's set up here on the Glass Half Full at ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. If you'd like to be a part of the conversation, you can text or call 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. Tennessee, Ohio State, the interesting thing I'm looking at here in this matchup is going to be the weather. Ohio State is definitely going to be – it's going to be colder than Tennessee. Not saying Tennessee's not chilly or cold this time of year, and not saying that they don't have to deal with things like snow and cold weather and things like that. It's just it's a different environment in Ohio State. It is going to be interesting to see these two teams on the field together because kind of like what Nick was saying with bowl games, we see matchups that we've never seen before or we just don't see a lot of that would be really fun to see on the regular basis. Tennessee, Ohio State, definitely one of those for sure. Josh Heupel going into this game. I feel like the offense for Tennessee is I feel like this game has the potential to be what we thought the Indiana-Ohio State game could be, right? Back and forth, scoring a lot of points. This game has the potential to be that. I think Tennessee is going to be able to find some success against this Ohio State defense. Big question for me, Will Howard bouncing back from that bad game he had against Michigan. Is that going to be something that's still in the back of his head when he hits the field to play? Or is it going to be something that he's able to clear the mechanism and go out there and just start fresh? So we'll see how all that plays out. As far as some of the teams that that didn't get in, first off, I want to start by addressing a couple of things I saw on social media. Because there's a couple of things that I saw that really just kind of were irritants for me. First and foremost, Florida State fans that have a gripe because Texas is in and Georgia is in and Carson Beck got injured in the SEC championship game and had to sit out a half. Once again, we have Florida State fans going out there going, there's not a peep from the committee on any drop-off from Georgia. As a matter of fact, they boosted them up to being the number two team in the country. Well, yeah, because they are the number two team in the country. Did you see how their backup came in and played in the SEC championship game? Arguably the biggest stage he's ever played on. The quarterbacks that Florida State had behind Jordan Travis last year would not have been able to do that. Oh, but they won the ACC. Yeah, they won the ACC against the Louisville team, right? It's not like they were playing number one, number two team in the country like Georgia was. So there's no similarities here other than the fact that the guy plays quarterback, right? Also, you look at Carson Beck, as long as there's no major structural damage to his shoulder, he should actually be back by the time Georgia plays a college football playoff game because they are in the quarterfinals, so they're not playing a game until the Sugar Bowl on New Year's Day. So Carson Beck has plenty of time to rest that shoulder and get back into playing shape. Jordan Travis was out for good. So it just doesn't match up. So if you're a Florida State fan and you're complaining because the committee still let Georgia in and put Georgia at number two when their quarterback got hurt, but then they left you out last year because your quarterback got hurt, it's not the same scenario. It's not. And to those few that keep posting it on social media, no matter how much you post, no matter how much you whine and complain, it's not going to change the fact that the committee didn't let you in last year. Let it go. Move on with your life. You'll be a lot happier. Trust me, the stress won't be there. Also, Alabama fans that are raising the case of, well, our out-of-conference schedule was better than SMU's or better than whoever else, trying to plead and make the case as to why they should have gotten into the college football playoff. Fact of the matter is, Alabama fans, I'm going to remind you of this. If you feel like you got cheated or wronged by the committee, you lost three games. And before you even start the conversation of how your out-of-conference schedule was, your out-of-conference schedule was Western Kentucky, South Florida, Wisconsin, and Mercer. Outside of Wisconsin, there is not a – even with Wisconsin, because Wisconsin was mediocre at best this year, there's not a tough game on there. What am I supposed to look at and be impressed by on that? Am I supposed to be impressed with 63-0 over Western Kentucky? Am I supposed to be impressed with 42-16 over South Florida? You want to know why I'm not impressed by that one? Because I remember it being 16-14 South Florida going into the fourth quarter. You had a big fourth quarter and pushed the score up, ran points up on the board in them to make it look better. You didn't beat them handily like that. That was a two-point game in favor of the Bulls heading into the fourth quarter in Bryant-Denny Stadium. So don't try to pawn that one off as it's being a great game because, honestly, that might work negatively in your favor because you should have had them put away by that point in the game. Wisconsin, you go on the road and you drum them by 32 points. Again, mediocre team at best this year. And then, ooh, yes, let me be impressed with a 52-7 win over Mercer. Mercer's a good football team at their level, but their level is not Alabama. You're out of conference schedule, Alabama, played against you. The three losses you had played against you, right? And I think perfectly what sums it up is, you know, the social media guy, Willie, I can't remember like his full name, but he, you know, don't give a bleep about nothing but the Tide. I actually saw him talking about this on a social media video yesterday when that final 12th spot was announced and he had his reaction. But he followed it up by saying this, and this is what I'm going to leave you with heading into the break, Alabama fans. This is why you show up and play Alabama football each week and don't have any drop downs or letdowns. You had three or four drop downs and letdowns this year. You were able to save yourself in a couple of them, but ultimately three got you in the end. That's why you're not in the college football playoffs. You're playing Michigan in a bowl game. It's going to set you up to be a top 10, top 15 team in 2025. Kalen DeBoer goes out and goes 11-1 next year. You'll be right back in the college football playoffs. So again, just accept it, be good with it, and move on. As Bill Belichick would say, we're on to Michigan. Let's take a quick timeout. We'll be back with more right after this.
Calling all FSU Seminole fans. Tomahawk Talk is here. Tune in Wednesday from 9 till 10 right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM, to get the latest on Florida State football. Hear from the experts, the superfans, and even some former players about what's happening on the field, the sidelines, to the locker room. It's your chance to be a part of the conversation and let your war chant out. It's Tomahawk Talk, Wednesday from 9 till 10. Tomahawk Talk, brought to you by the law firm of Gross & Schuster.
Mike Greenberg, weekdays right before the Rich Eisen Show on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
It's the Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Welcome back in to the Glass Half Full. Lots of different news breaking and coming out on different players. We learned just a little bit ago, South Alabama true freshman running back Fluff Bothwell is going to be entering the transfer portal. So there'll be several teams keeping an eye on that young man. Still lots of eligibility left. A couple of players from Alabama have entered the portal already. We've got a couple of other SEC players that are kind of flirting on the idea of entering the portal, and we'll continue to just get more of those announcements and news, as well as I'm sure probably updates on coaching searches and some news on maybe some new coaching searches opening up over the next few days, as it's that time of year in college football, time for players to hit the transfer portal and coaches either leaving to take a new job or they are getting fired from their job. Either way, speaking of coaches and taking new jobs, a couple of new names to talk about from over the weekend. Todd Grantham, the former defensive coordinator at Georgia, at Florida, at several other places, has been in the NFL the last season or so, and he's coming back to college. He's going to be the defensive coordinator at Oklahoma State. This was not a smart move by Mike Gundy. It was not. Look, when you're playing in a conference like the Big 12, where you're in a conference that's not known for playing defense, then sure, yeah. I mean, hey, hire a guy like Todd Grantham, because his defense is going to fit right in the Big 12, because it doesn't stop anybody. Right. I mean, we saw that at Georgia. We saw it at Florida. You know, that was really kind of the big issue. One of the big issues on the field with Dan Mullen at Florida, with the Florida fan base, is that he would not fire Todd Grantham. He would not move on from Todd Grantham and actually go get a better defensive coordinator. So instead, he just kind of stuck around with whatever Todd was doing, which really, honestly and truthfully, wasn't working that well at the University of Florida. So he goes and spends some time being a position coach in the NFL, and now he's back at the college level, the defensive coordinator there for Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy needing to make good hires in order to kind of keep his job, right? Because the narrative around him lately has been, is he going to keep his job, or will they actually move on away from him? Looks like they are going to decide to keep him for 2025 with this decision, and he will he'll head in with a new defensive coordinator. So we'll see how that plays out for him. I don't expect it to play out well at all. How about Central Florida? They have their coach, right? Last week we talked about how they had Lincoln Riley on their mind and kind of had the idea of possibly trying to steal him away because they wanted to bring in a coach who was offensive-minded, because they feel like that's where their bread and butter is. Kind of almost like Florida with Steve Spurrier, and then you bring in Urban Meyer, who I know Urban's specialty was special teams, But I think he really was an offensive-minded guy at heart as well. Loved to score a lot of points. And now, you know, you see it with them bringing in a guy like Billy Napier, who's an offensive coordinator, and you know, Jim McElwain before that, and then Dan Mullen in between. So, you know, Florida in UCF kind of like to hire the offensive-minded guys, and they feel like that's their bread and butter and where they have success at. So they had an eye out for Lincoln Riley. Obviously, as we talked about last week, that wasn't going to happen. Well, they went out and they found somebody else, and they say never go back to an ex, right? Never go back to an ex. It'll never work out. And in my history, yeah, that saying is very, very true. Very true. Tends to get a little toxic. And when I say a little toxic, I mean very toxic. But we pivot from that to bring up the fact that Central Florida has hired Scott Frost to once again be their head coach. Of course, Scott Frost didn't do that bad of a job at UCF. You know, he was one of the, you know, main ingredients there in that big turnaround and getting them to the point to where they were with, you know, playing LSU in the Fiesta Bowl and you know, what it was, the next year they went on to win the Peach Bowl or whatever it was. So, you know, they were a big power under Scott Frost, scoring a lot of points, just blowing everybody out, and they were a good football team. So he's coming back now after obviously he left to go take the Nebraska job. That failed miserably for him, blew up in his face, but he's back and he's going to try to kind of fix what's been happening since Josh Heupel left to take the Tennessee job, which has just been a downward trajectory for UCF. So he's going to try to fix that and bring that program back up to where it was when he left the first time to go to Nebraska. So we'll see what happens there. Look, I think Scott Frost being in that area, having the connections that he has as far as recruiting, I think it could be a big thing for UCF and for Scott Frost because it's going to get him back into the good graces, right? Like right now, he's not getting a lot of attention for a lot of jobs because of the way that Nebraska situation went. And I think, you know, I think this is going to be a good thing for him. He's going to be able to go have success at UCF if he can get them into a prestigious bowl game next year or within the next couple of years. I think that's going to bolster his credibility, and it's going to get him back into the limelight as far as potential coaching searches go for other big jobs. Now, since he's already done that and left to go to Nebraska, would he potentially leave to go to another bigger school? Probably not. I think he's kind of decided UCF is it for him, so he's back in his old stomping grounds, and I think it's going to work out. I think that's going to work out pretty well. The Todd Grantham one, I don't think that's going to have a good outcome, honestly and truthfully. It's the Glass Half Full, ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. If you want to be a part of today's show, 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. Let's finally get back to taking a look at some of those conference championship games from over the weekend. For the Boise State Championship game, the Mountain West Championship game against UNLV, 21-7 win there for Boise. Boise State, really, their defense came up big for them. Obviously, Ginty, 32 carries, 209 yards. He is that offense, right? So, numbers you expect from him in that game. But really, Boise State's defense, what was it, 2 fourth down stops inside, like their own 30-yard line or something like that. So, definitely could have been a closer ball game, but thanks to that Boise State Bronco defense, they really kind of locked up that UNLV offense. So they end up getting the win there, and obviously they are in the College Football Playoff Committee now. Or not the College Football Playoff Committee, just the College Football Playoffs. Army and Tulane. Army wins this one 35-14. I'm not surprised that Army won. I'm surprised that they won by 21 points. I was very surprised by this. Tulane is a good football team. But really, the last two games for Tulane offensively have just been miserable. Whether it was that game on Thanksgiving against Memphis or this game against Army, Tulane has just not been able to get anything going offensively. So if you're a Florida fan, that should be promising for you moving forward in the Gasparilla Bowl, is that the Tulane offense just trailing down, plus their quarterback is in the transfer portal. So may or may not be playing in that game. On Saturday, that's when we had the big boys play in Penn State and Oregon. What a game that was. 45-37, the final score in that one. Looked like maybe Penn State could have an opportunity, but Oregon's just too good of a football team. They really are. Oregon's just way too good of a football team. There was no way Oregon was losing this game. I think one of the things that Oregon talks about, that Oregon doesn't get credit for, is how they put teams away, right? Like, they've had close games. Hey, they played a close game against Boise State. They only beat Boise State by a field goal. but they always manage to seem to close out the game and put that opposing team away however they need to do it. So I think Oregon is definitely proving their point as why they are one of the strongest teams inside the playoffs. The SEC championship game, the rematch between Georgia and Texas. Texas in this game just could not score touchdowns. They scored one touchdown the entire game. One touchdown the entire game in the third quarter. You are not going to beat a team like Georgia. And honestly and truthfully, if they don't get the offense more productive, they're not going to win much into the college football playoff. Like I said, I think on paper, they've got the better team than Clemson. They're playing at home against Clemson in the opening round of the playoffs. I think they'll be able to get that win. But when they hit deeper in the playoffs and they're playing a Penn State or they're playing even a Boise State who can score a lot of points and rack up a lot of yards, especially running the football, does Texas have enough offensive firepower? Quinn Ewers nursing an ankle just wasn't himself in that game. And then Georgia, credit Etienne, you know, left Florida to go to Georgia because he wanted to go win championships. He left Florida to go to a place where he wanted to be able to compete for a championship, and that's why he went to Georgia ultimately. I know a lot of Florida fans don't like it because he went to we'll call it what it is. It is their biggest heated rival. So they're upset by that, but honestly, you can't fault the guy on this. And, I mean, you look at his stat line, absolutely incredible in this game. 16 carries, 94 yards, 2 touchdowns, including the game winner in overtime. So a big game there for Georgia. Their 22-19 win clinches the SEC championship game for them and moves them up to that number 2 spot in the college football playoffs. So they will have that first round bye. And Clemson and SMU, this was the one that I was impressed with over the course of the night. And I actually tweeted out that, you know, the ACC for most of the season was the most mediocre conference, that it's only fitting that they give us the best conference championship game. And there was a lot of good games. I mean, the Texas-Georgia game was good. The Penn State-Oregon game was great. But this Clemson-SMU game, I think the fact that Clemson is up 24-7 at halftime doesn't really look like there's much hope for SMU. And then SMU just comes storming back with 24 points inside the second half. As a matter of fact, they outscored Clemson 24-10 in the second half. Unfortunately, they just could not get it done. I think if you're SMU and you go back and you watch this game, you are going to be sick to your stomach. You are going to be deathly sick to your stomach because drops were a big thing with SMU in this game. And really kind of a big reason why. And then special teams miscues, right? You go down and you take the lead, right? You tie it up. It's 31-31. We're going to go into overtime. You kick the ball off, and Clemson returns it past the 50 and is pretty much one pass completion away from field goal range. And that's how that game ends. The drops, though, going back to those for SMU, man, they had like 5 all season. They had 6, I believe, in that game against Clemson on Saturday night. So they doubled their season turnout, right? So they had 5 drops on the entire season, and they added another 6 to that in just this one game. This is a football team that does not drop the football. It was very, very odd to see them drop the ball the way that they did the ACC championship game. But then also at the same time, you got to cover kickoffs better, right? If you're the special teams coach for SMU heading into the postseason, heading into the playoffs, you better be working on kickoff coverage, because there are some guys that will burn you. Where Clemson just took it past the 50, there are some other guys in the playoffs that will take it all the way to the house. Got to play better on special teams for sure if you're SMU, and you got to catch the football. We'll take a timeout. When we come back, more of the glass half full right after this.
Hey, if you own or manage a business in the greater Pensacola area, how would you like to get your business in front of men ages 25 to 54? Well, that's who listens to ESPN Pensacola.
Hey!
Okay, men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah.
Excuse me?
And Jill. Whether it be a radio ad with ESPN Pensacola or online through ADX Digital, we can come up with the best solutions for you. Get in front of men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah and Jill.
Woohoo! Yeah!
Just go to our website, ESPNPensacola.com, click on the sales opportunity.
This is Wendy with Barbary Plumbing wishing you a safe holiday season. Remember, please don't drink and drive.
Hi, this is Brandon Cherry.
And Taylor Cartwright.
We're the owners of the Culvers here in Pensacola and Milton. Just wishing everybody happy holiday season.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Hi, this is James Zirkle with Seville Power and Lawn Equipment wishing you happy holidays.
Ho, 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 ho. Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.
Paul Feinbaum on weekday afternoons after the Rich Eisen Show. 2 to 6 on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
It's the Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Closing out today's show on this Monday morning. Of course, we will start by taking a look at your headline roundup. Top headlines happening in the world of sports. Looks like the Kansas City Chiefs are the next team to clinch their division with an AFC West championship yesterday with their very close win. Yet another squeaker win for them. And they get it done. AFC West champions for what, the umpteenth year in a row. So they will head into the postseason as AFC West champions. And of course, they are competing right there for the Buffalo Bills with that top spot inside the AFC for the playoffs. Some college football news as far as recruiting. Chase Herbstreit, that name sound familiar. That is the son of Kirk Herbstreit. You know Kirk Herbstreit, who played quarterback at Ohio State? Yeah, Chase Herbstreit has committed to play for Michigan. That's going to be a fun Christmas morning. Yeah, that's so Herbie, after being such a big-time Buckeye pretty much all his life, has now got to support his son, who is going to go play for that school up north. That's going to be an interesting one for sure. I wonder how Kirk handled that news of finding out his son was going to be heading to Michigan on that one. The Philadelphia Eagles, despite beating Carolina yesterday and moving to 11-2, definitely frustrated. You could tell that after the game. Just not on the same page, just completely off rhythm. But despite that, they still continue to find a way to win, and they're 11-2 because of it. And that just shows how good of a team they are and the job that Nick Sirianni's done with this program to still be completely out of sync, completely off rhythm, and to still go out and get the win. That is definitely something that they should be, you know, maybe less frustrated about and look at it and say, you know what? Even when things aren't working for us, they still tend to work pretty well. So let's just keep going out there and playing our game. We'll eventually work our way out of this funk. The Mets, M-E-T-S, Mets, just got a whole lot better. Juan Soto signed a 50-year, $756 million contract with the New York Mets. I knew Juan Soto was not going to go back to the Yankees, but I thought he would go to L.A. or the Red Sox. I thought the Dodgers and the Red Sox, and there for a while it seemed like everything he was hearing was that the Red Sox were the favorite to land him and bring him in. But nope, that is not the way it's panned out. Definitely looks like Juan Soto heading to the Mets, a 15-year deal worth $756 million. So the good thing is, if you're, you know, related to Juan Soto in some way, shape, or form, you're probably going to get a pretty good Christmas present. I'm just saying. I'm putting that out there. If you are friends or family of Juan Soto, chances are your Christmas present is going to be pretty darn good from him this year. At least it better be. $756 million contract. Come on, man. But that's, I mean, it's good for the Mets. It's good. It's. You know, the Mets, look, if the Mets can afford to pay him that and bring him in, he's definitely going to be a benefit for them, and that's going to be one of those extra steps and extra pushes they need to be in a playoff contender and a championship contender there in the NL East, because it is a tough division with the Braves, with the Phillies, even the Marlins. You know, they're not a bad team. They can play spoiler to you if you are in a position to maybe win the division. They could play spoiler to you and hurt your chances there. It's a tough division. Bringing Juan Soto in is definitely a big positive move there for the New York Mets. We've got Monday Night Football tonight. By the way, you are listening to The Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Cincinnati Bengals on the road against the Dallas Cowboys, and I am very intrigued by this game tonight. No, not because of anything happening on the field, but it's because it is the Simpson game. Yeah, that's right. So it's going to be the Simpson game. Bart is going to be coaching against Homer. I believe Homer is coaching the – I want to say Homer is coaching the Cowboys, and Bart's supposed to be coaching the Bengals. But it is going to be very interesting to see how this goes, because the Toy Story one in my mind didn't really work out that well, right? I think it was just kind of it was just meh. It was not as good as you thought it would have been. And then when I believe Paramount tried to do one with SpongeBob, that one was a little bit more interactive with the characters. The characters were there to talk and actually converse back and forth. They actually had the actors who do the voices of the characters on SpongeBob with like headsets and microphone on, so they could talk as the character as part of the broadcast. And you would see a SpongeBob or a Patrick on the screen as they were talking or whatever. But I think it just, again, just one of those weird things that I don't know. I would be good if we never did anything like this again in the NFL. As far as the game itself goes, Cowboys secondary, will they be healthy against this passing attack for the Bengals led by Ja'Marr Chase? If they're not, could be trouble for them at home. I actually am going to go with the Bengals on the road in this game. Even though they don't have Evan McPherson, I think they still find a way to get it done on the road. Snap that three-game losing streak. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you again to Nick Carparelli for joining us. Have a great Monday. Greeny coming up next.